Morning and welcome everyone to week 5 of Precious Moments. We're working on time management based on values. Before we begin, I just want to give a special welcome to Yael Ben Yosef, is it? Who's with her husband here, Shluchim of UIA. I make special mention of that today because as Jews, critical to our Jewish experience, of course, is the land of Israel and the holiness of the land of Israel, particularly in the times that we find ourselves today. And being that this is UIA week, so special welcome and lots of hatzlacha. Just also to mention, we've got, besides today, we've got 2 more weeks for this term. And I say this term, this year, depending on which school you connect it to, the terms are a bit funny, but we'll go according to what we normally do, which is the Festival of Pesach, and we're going to go for another 2 weeks, and then I'll announce the topic for after that. Probably announce it next week or the week after. But also to point out that as we're coming closer to Pesach, we're going to be doing a special class, special session on Wednesday, the 13th of March, at 10:30 a.m. at Ariella Spiridis' house, which is 99 Wentworth Street, on called Life Lessons from the Festival of Pesach. So that's got nothing to do with the Thursday, it's a separate one which we'll do in about 2 weeks from now. 13th of March. Okay. Also, before I forget, I should announce it now because Wentworth Road, not Wentworth Street, Wentworth Road. That's great, sorry. Before I forget also, because sometimes at the end we get involved and I forget to announce the things I'm supposed to announce. So you might have seen in the email, we've just launched our yearly raffle. You'll get a call in due course of time, but of course it's one of our major fundraisers of the year. So if you can respond and respond as best you can, it certainly is critical to keeping us going. Okay, so we're working on time management based on values. There's plenty of chairs coming. In the context of personal growth. Now, in the last couple of weeks, we've been working on these 4 quadrants. I've gotten fancy this week. You've got a proper poster up for you. Okay. You know, and it's interesting, we're coming up soon to the month of Nisan, the month where we have the festival of Pesach, and we know that when the Jews left Egypt, I think I might have mentioned this the first session, the first mitzvah, the very first commandment they were given as a Jewish nation was the mitzvah of sanctifying time. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem was the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, the mitzvah to create a calendar, and the calendar should follow the lunar system and should be surrounded, this concept of making the first day of the month holy, called Kiddush HaChodesh, which is the concept, the message, is the preciousness of time, the sanctity of time, and using time in a meaningful way. As we said last week, not just in an efficient way, but in an effective way, in a meaningful way, in a purposeful way. And it's interesting that in the Jewish experience generally, if one examines Jewish law, you'll see that there's an amazing consciousness of time, perhaps even much more than other cultures. There's a tremendous focus on certain things having to happen in a certain time. There's times of prayer. And there's like times of the morning prayer and the afternoon prayer and Shabbat, when Shabbat comes in, Shabbat goes out, festivals. There's an amazing consciousness of time. If one follows the details of Jewish law, one is always conscious of like when is sunset and when is sunrise and when do the fast begin at dawn and when does it come out at dusk. And there's quite a consciousness of... There's more chairs here, there's more chairs. There's more. We put some extra ones in this week, so down there there's more. Right? So there's this consciousness of time, which again sends this very important message that time is precious, and that the moments that we are given, that God gave us throughout our lifetime in this limited time that we have on this planet, is something which we need to view as a gift and to sort of appreciate it and use it effectively, and which is really the basis of what we're trying to discuss over these number of weeks. So we've been working on these 4 quadrants, and today what I want to do is I want to complete and just review and clarify and consolidate much of what we've done, because this is such a critical model. It really, for me at least anyway, I don't know how you found it, but for me it is an incredible model, an incredible formula that gives a perspective on how to sort of manage our week and manage our days. Now, what I want to emphasize today, and we'll just review some of what we did last week and add a little bit to it, but what I want to emphasize today is that when we talked about moving into what we call quadrant two, which is the quadrant of values, the things that we do that are important, that are based on our personal mission statement, that are based on the values which guide our life and create that destination and the overall goal, it's not just about learning strategies, how to say no to quadrant three and quadrant four, right? And for those who weren't here till now, we'll review this in a minute very quickly. But it actually is about a whole different shift, a mindset shift, what Stephen Covey in Seven Habits calls a paradigm shift. In other words, it's about looking at our week and our looking at our priorities in a very, very different way. And that'll become a lot clearer as we go through what we're going to do today. So let's just review very, very quickly. So we've talked about the four quadrants. I think we now know what it is. That quadrant one is urgent and important, called the quadrant of necessity, things that are emergencies, things that we can't avoid, deadlines, health issues, the leak in the roof, things that are crisis that just have to be taken care of. Quadrant two is what's important but not urgent, and that's the quadrant we want to really focus on. That's the quadrant which is our value quadrant. It's the quadrant of effectiveness. It's the personal growth, the spiritual growth, the relationship building, self-study, things that we want to invest time in to do the things that matter for us, right? Quadrant three is what we call the quadrant of deception. It's urgent but not important, and mostly comes from other people. Interruptions, urgent, apparently urgent emails, I must talk to you now, distractions, all these things that keep on popping up, which are really not that urgent, they just appear to be urgent, they have this aura of urgency, but they're not really important either. And then quadrant four is the quadrant of escape, and it's the quadrant of just not important, not urgent, it's time-wasting, excessive internet surfing, schmoozing excessively, excessive phone talking, things that we just escape into and don't get around to the things that are important. And what we've been emphasizing over the last couple of weeks is our challenge is to minimize quadrant three and quadrant four to make quadrant two bigger, and we make quadrant two bigger, it makes quadrant one smaller. And I hope everyone's been doing their homework and practicing it in a good way. Now, when we talked about tips, right, to get out of quadrant three, and we talked about one is, of course, to learn to say no. One is to understand that no is a proactive word and a good word sometimes. Setting boundaries, creating boundaries around us, creating boundaries for other people in a respective and effective way. But one thing we probably didn't mention and emphasize enough, which we should, is that quadrant three is not something that has to be eliminated completely. It just has to be managed properly. For example, just on a practical note, all those annoying emails that need to be answered. Now, the truth is that a polite person does answer emails, right? When we talk about time management based on values, we talk about time management in the context of effective social relationships. And just to ignore a person because, you know, if I don't respond to the email, it won't matter because it won't change my life and it won't make me less productive. Well, it won't make you less productive, but it might make you less of a mensch. Now, people do need to be answered, and we do need to be polite, and that's part of time management based on values rather than based on productivity. But it's also how we do it and when we do it. You see, the problem of quadrant three is that we become addicted to urgency, right? That's what we spoke about over the last few weeks. We become addicted to this demand of things must be done now. That if someone emailed me and it popped up on the screen, I'm just using an interrupter, and if the phone goes, I must answer it, or I must return the missed call right now. That's the problem. That's the destructiveness of quadrant three. And when we talk about time management based on values, where we do want to be a mensch, and we do want to return people's call, even if it's not that important, it doesn't need to be done now. We need to create, the quadrant three activities don't need to be eliminated completely, but they need to be contained. And part of containing them is to create blocks. Blocks of when you do it. So there's a time of the day that I would reply to emails. There's a time of the day you'll return calls. It doesn't have to be at the moment when you're in the middle of a quadrant two activity, right? And part of blocking those activities is to find times of the day. You see, part of good time management, and we're going to talk about this a bit later as well, is also knowing yourself. Knowing when you work better. Every person has their downtime, uptime. Right. Yeah, let's change that. Right. Every person has their times that they work better. They work, and it works differently for every single person, right? I'm a morning person. I don't operate very well at night. Operate very well in the morning. If I wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, I am crisp fresh. My teenage son thinks I'm completely crazy. Right? He's not a single guy anymore. He just got married, but he's the opposite. Apparently his wife's going to have to sort him out. But he's a guy that he wakes up at night, and he could study. He's a good student, and he could study Gemara, Talmud, in-depth stuff till 3 o'clock in the morning. But of course, the morning is like, he's like comatose, you know what I'm saying? Like, you talk to him like 7 o'clock in the morning, he doesn't even know what you're talking about. I'm not sure how that's going to pan out, but eventually you'll work it out, I guess, right? Everyone's different. Now, I say that because when you plan your day, you've got to plan quadrant two activities, for example, when you're fresh. They're important. They need attention. They need to be done properly. But answering a bunch of phone calls or a bunch of emails don't need your undivided. They don't need a lot of brain space most of the time, right? So therefore, the point I'm making is that quadrant three, although we talked about eliminating it, we don't mean eliminating it, but we mean containing it, blocking off times, taking away the urgency out of it, and making sure that we block off times when we anyways have a downtime, when we anyways tired, that's the time to set aside an hour. I can't concentrate anyways, there's not a time for me to study, I'm just going to answer emails or something like that. Okay, that was quadrant three. And then last week we had quite a strong look at quadrant four and understanding why people escape. Right, so they escape into it because they're scared of failure. People sometimes suffer from a disease called perfectionism, which can be very, very debilitating because they're scared to do anything less than perfect, and therefore the response is we just go, rather not do it altogether. So we slip into that quadrant four, just forgetting about all the quadrant two activities until they become quadrant one activities and they become a crisis and we're forced into it, right? So we talked about this concept of the salami method of starting things slowly, tasting success, understanding that a little bit of success is also success. We don't need to be perfect. That whole idea of celebrating the direction rather than the perfection. But one of the things that we talked about last week towards the end, and this I want to just pick up from there and move into what we're doing today, is the concept of living in the moment. And I think that's an incredibly powerful thing when it comes to managing our time. Talked about it last night as well a little bit, Baishir. That concept of living in the moment is so important. And just to recap what we said last week, that in the literature, in Jewish literature, managing our time, managing our days, managing our life, we have this fundamental principle of not living, we don't live for the moment because we live with a purpose and an overall goal. That's that personal mission statement concept. But we do live in the moment. And living in the moment means is to understand that what I do now, whether it's study, whether it's personal growth, whether it's relationships, whether it's recreation, if it's necessary, whether it's eating healthily, whatever I'm doing is the most important thing. If it's based on my values, if it's part of my overall mission statement, then it's sacred. It doesn't have to be holy, it can be mundane. If it's mundane but with a purpose, it is as holy as something which is sacred, right? And therefore that gives us the ability, or it should give us the ability, that when we do whatever we do now, we are fully there, we are fully present. You get the maximum benefit out of experiencing something when you're completely there. And in today's fast world, it often doesn't happen. We're always on the go. We're always rushing, right? We might be in an activity, but we're in an activity on a certain level. Our hands are there. Our behavior is in the activity, but our brain isn't. Our heart isn't. Because our brain and heart are thinking about what happened an hour ago, worrying about what's about to happen tomorrow. And we're just not completely there. And therefore, not completely there, first of all, diminishes the success and the effectiveness of what I'm doing now, and also prevents me from doing it in the first place. Because what happens is, we all got ups and downs, right? So we often have days that get messed up, we often have things that go wrong, we get frazzled, we get off balance, we get out of sync. And as soon as we do that, we find it very, very hard to focus on an important activity. And very often we don't do the quadrant two activities, because we're just not in the mood. We can't focus. We can't focus because the day hasn't gone right till now, and we've got so much to worry about for tomorrow. We're planning tomorrow. We so much to do for tomorrow night. So much to do for this. So much to do for that. That we just can't zero in and be fully present where we are. And we talked about this idea of developing an ability. It's a hard. It takes a lot of practice. Developing an ability of filtering out whatever happened till now, and blocking out what's about to happen after now, and being fully present the way we are. And that comes with a philosophy that every hour, every minute is independent. The success of this hour has nothing to do with last hour and next hour. The success of today has nothing to do with yesterday and nothing to do with tomorrow. Every good thing that we do, any valuable thing that we do is eternal. Every valuable thing that you do has to be looked at independently and completely separately. I saw a beautiful, just to add to this concept a little bit, I saw a beautiful little story, two stories. One is a story of a lecturer that was lecturing to an audience, and he was talking about stress management, which is related to this concept as well. And he held up a glass of water, and he said to the audience, "How much does this glass of water weigh?" had no measurements on it, so he got guesses from the audience. 500 grams, 750 grams. To which he answered, he said, the truth is that the absolute weight of the water actually doesn't matter. It all depends how long you hold it. If you hold a glass of water for a minute, it's fine. If you hold a glass of water for an hour, you will get a sore arm. If you hold a glass of water for a whole day, you'll have to call an ambulance. Right, that's the truth. So it makes a difference. And that's really such a great lesson for life, because what we tend to do, we do this in relationships, we do this in our life experiences, we do it in our activities, we tend to carry over, we tend to carry and hold on to whatever is happening in our life all the time. Now, it's not easy not to do that, because we have some really important and urgent things on our mind. We have things we have to plan, which we're scared might not work out. We have that pressure. But yet, cognitively, we all know that if you sit in one activity, if you're playing with your child, or you're talking to a friend, or you're taking a walk with your spouse, and you're distracted and you're worrying about the event that you have to plan tomorrow, we all know that worrying about it now is not going to make the event more efficient. That's just a simple formula. And yet it's hard, because it's on our mind and it's playing, and we find it difficult to filter out what is happening later and what happened before. And that concept of living in the moment is so important if we want to move into quadrant two. Because sometimes we have a really quadrant one day, everything is going topsy-turvy. But there is an hour spare, or there is a half an hour spare. And we could actually do something and schedule something meaningful for that half an hour, which is part of our value system, which is part of our quadrant two activities. And yet we can't, because we're too frazzled. That part of learning to do this is learning to block out what happened before, block out what's going to happen, and just zero in. There's another little beautiful story I just read recently of about a Hasidic Rebbe called the Chayzer of Lublin. Chayzer of Lublin is called the Seer of Lublin. He was a great tzaddik, a great Hasidic Rebbe. And he had every Hasidic Rebbe has their own sort of emphasis in terms of how they serve God, or their own sort of pet mitzvah, whatever the case is. And this particular Rebbe, he wanted to achieve a concept where when he davened, when he prayed, he would pray in the morning with complete intensity and complete joy. There's a concept of serving God with joy, particularly we just come from the festival of Purim. So he wanted to sort of absorb an inner joy, inner sort of festivity almost, when he would pray. So that would be a great way to connect to God because the Talmud tells us that the Shekhinah, the divine presence, only rests upon a person that is joyous, that is happy. So what he would do, he had this interesting little practice every single day before he would daven, and the davening for him would take a long time because he would do it very intensely and with a lot of devotion. He would find a child and give the child a gift, I don't know, a biscuit, a cookie, a coin, something. And he would see the child smile and become very happy, and that happiness is contagious, and he would absorb that happiness, and with that happiness he would then channel it and go and pray. So one time, one of his followers asked him the following question, like, why do you always look for a child? If you want to make someone happy, why don't you give it to an adult? I mean, after all, the child's a dependent. Like, why don't you give it to an adult that probably needs it more if you want to make someone happy? Now, of course, he did support the adults and he gave charity, etc. But he said the reason is as follows. Because when my goal is to achieve happiness, I want to achieve and absorb pure happiness. And only a child has pure happiness. Because, he said, an adult is too attached to the moments before this moment and too absorbed in what still has to happen. When I give an adult something, they need more, it's not enough, they're worrying about how they're going to survive tomorrow, this might last for the next hour, but it's not going to work for tomorrow. See, adults are like that. Adults become, because we do think and we have a certain level of maturity, we are worried about what happened. We do carry guilt. We are worried about things that have to happen with success in the future. Children don't do that. If you want a fantastic example of people that live in the moment, that's children, right? I always say this at parenting things, right? When you have sibling rivalry, parents always complain, what do I do about sibling rivalry? And the answer is, I don't know. It's one of the things of parenting I've never been able to figure out. But I figured out one thing, right? I did figure out one thing when my children used to fight. And that is that when children almost kill each other, and the parent is watching this and really, really, you know how you tense up when you see fighting and he took it and she took it and this one smacks the other one, etc. And the mother or the father sort of falls apart, like, why are you fighting? Why can't you get on? That kind of thing, right? What often happens is that the mother is still, or the parent is still worried about it 2 hours later, and suddenly 3 minutes later, the children are playing like best friends. And if you ever saw that, that's an incredible thing. Like, what happened? And there's two reasons for that. You see, one reason is because, first of all, it's a great lesson. First of all, it's a great lesson for all conflict resolution. And that is that children make a choice. I think we've said this before. Children choose to be happy rather than be right. Right? Adults do the opposite. Adults choose to be right rather than happy. You know, I should forgive that person. I should call them up. I should talk to them. You know what they said to me last week? So I'm going to carry it for the next 7 years because, you know what I mean? Like, in the meantime, we're not having a relationship. They're unhappy. I'm unhappy. So what? But I'm right. At least I'm right. No, adults do that. What can we do? We all do that, right? So children don't do that. Children choose to be happy rather than right. But more importantly, the reason that they're able to do that is because children live in the moment. Now, the truth is that children do that because of immaturity, right? That's the truth. But it doesn't matter. It's a fantastic model. Children have forgotten what happened. They don't know the repercussions. They don't have a sense of consequence. They don't have any worry. They don't have to work out. They don't have guilt necessarily. And therefore, it could be a very self-centered, immature approach. But nevertheless, it's a fantastic model to seeing someone live completely in the moment. So what? They almost killed the guy 3 minutes ago. But now, it suits me to play with them. And we're enjoying the game. So well, who cares what happened to them? Right? So it's an amazing model. And when it comes to managing our time and trying to get ourselves much more into quadrant two activities, things that really matter, things that don't have a sense of urgency, as we've been talking about, and that's why we put them off, but nevertheless are incredibly important towards getting us towards our values, one of the greatest tools is to learn this art of blocking out everything else and just focusing on the moment.
Would you say that one of the main problems adults have is that they're too busy in their judging mind? We're analyzing, we're keeping the score, we're working out how are we doing.
Yeah. So one of the gifts... Exactly.
So one of the gifts
of the adult mind is that we're able to think. But that also every gift becomes
a
liability. Correct. And we do think too much. And sometimes we just have to let go, not think, and we'll think when the time comes. You see, we're not talking about here being irresponsible. If I've got something that I need to plan or deal with or a crisis or a health issue, whatever the case, or a conflict or a... or something I've done wrong, as I told you last week, right? Now I've got something I need to deal with it. I need to deal with it, but I need to compartmentalize it. I need to decide when I'm going to think about it and when I'm going to invest the brain space to do that. Playing those records in your mind all day, that's destructive. And we do that because we have that power of intellectual maturity and we do analyze and we become over-analytical. We analyze people, we analyze ourselves. We're often very much too hard on ourselves. I messed up this morning. I didn't do it. I was supposed to. Now my whole day is gone. All that kind of stuff. We judge other people. That's part of the analysis. And it becomes a huge obstacle. And that skill is to let go of that and to be completely absorbed in what we're doing. So how do we put this all together? And that's what I want to sort of complete today. I want to do it by just sharing with you a personal experience that happened last week. As I said, I feel comfortable doing that because I'm happy to tell you when things don't go right and happy to tell you when things do go right, you know, because we learn from ourselves and we learn from experiences. And I've given you homework, so I've been trying to work on the homework as well. So let me tell you what happened to me last week. And it was a great lesson because it was a victory on one level of time management and a total failure on the other. So last Thursday we had our session together. And last Thursday was a fast day. It was the fast day of Esther. Right? Normally it's the day before Purim, but this year, because the day before Purim was Shabbat, it was brought for to Thursday. I fast, okay? I just get incredibly hungry, but I miss my coffee, but otherwise we right. Now, last number of months, one of my quadrant two commitments for myself is Thursday nights. And it's got a spiritual significance as well, because Thursday night is a preparation for Shabbat, and I blocked off Thursday nights as much as I can to dedicate to sort of self-study. So I have certain things that I like to study on Thursday night, and it's been going fairly well as a quadrant two commitment. Right? Some of the stuff ends up being useful for Shirim, other stuff not, but it doesn't matter. It's my time to personalize. And what I did was, last Thursday was a fast day, and I thought, okay, the fast comes out at 20 past 8. I'll finish the evening prayers, go home and eat, and then, like a real hero, I'm going to sit down to my Thursday night weekly quadrant two. I had a very busy Thursday and was a fast day, and it was totally unrealistic expectation. And that's very, very much part of time management. When we set ourselves expectations that are totally unrealistic, because when you've had a hard day and a hectic day and it's been a fast day and you sit down to eat a fairly heavy meal after the fast day, which probably isn't a good idea anyways, but I did it, I just conked out, right? So I conked out completely afterwards. I'd had a pretty busy week. Not only did I not do my Thursday night, I overslept on Friday, came late to the minyan, and I started off Friday as a total wreck. Okay, so I'm telling you the truth. There's a good part to the end of the story. Hold on a second. So the first lesson is, and I share that with you because it's a small thing. I mean, it wasn't usually monumental and my life went on, thank God. But it's a great lesson for all quadrants. When we set ourselves, when we schedule important activities, we need to have realistic expectations. The timing has to be right. The time that you do it has to be right. You have to plan ahead. Part of effectiveness is thinking ahead. And I know myself. I know that after a fast, I fast okay, but it's after the fast that I don't operate very well. And I should remember that, right? And sort of plan accordingly and schedule a different time, whatever the case is. I arrived here on Friday morning, and last Friday was going to be a very hectic day because Sunday was Purim. And I had an amazing amount of things to do. All quadrant one stuff, right? To make sure that Purim happens the way it's supposed to happen. The night activities, the day activities, Mishloach Manot, everything we're putting together, you know, all packed into one day as Purim can be. And it was just going to be a really quadrant one day. But I had just given the session here on Thursday morning, and I'd just been inspired by what I had shared with you, that concept of living in the moment. Plus, I'd been inspired by something else, which I'll share with you in a minute. So I tried something. And I must be honest, this is a challenge for me. Because this living in the moment, I talk about a lot because, you know, you talk about things that you have to work with. Right? And I'm a very distracted person. I could be a distracted person. You know, when I was in yeshiva, I'll never forget this. Just to distract for a moment. When I was in yeshiva, see, I told you I'm a distracted person. When I was in yeshiva, I had a chavruta, which means I had a study partner. And we used to learn every day. We used to study the Talmud today, you know, every day in yeshiva, together for hours. He's remained a very, very great friend, lives in Baltimore. We often talk. And he was a very disciplined, focused guy, and I was a very distracted person. And one time, I remember, there was Lag BaOmer. You know, Lag BaOmer is a festival that comes up between Pesach and Shavuot, was coming up. And somehow, the responsibility of arranging a lot of Lag BaOmer activities landed on me and my chavruta, the guy called Sholem Reitschik, his name is. Now, I'll never forget this, because I was really envious. Because my mind was totally consumed by what we had to organize, and truly, you only needed about half a day for a week to organize this stuff, and we were given permission to take off our studies to work half a day. And the first half a day, we could come to our regular study schedule. Now, for him, that was no problem. He had amazing ability that for the first couple of hours of the day, we would study, and he was totally immersed in the study, totally forgot about all the urgencies and the emergencies that we had to arrange for the coming Sunday. And I wasn't like that. And he used to beat me up, not beat me up physically. I mean, he used to say, come on, what's with you? Where's your mind? Why are you wondering? And it was then that I started to think about this whole concept of living in the moment and sort of not being distracted what comes before and after. But it doesn't come naturally, right? So I decided, listen, I just gave the shiur yesterday. Let me try something out. I've got millions of things to do today. But you know what? I'm going to turn my mobile to airplane mode, as I've shared with you before. Turn off the computer. I'm going to take out the stuff that I normally study Thursday night. I normally spend 2 hours. Okay, I won't do 2 hours. I really don't have the time. I'll spend 1 hour. And I'm just going to forget about everything. Purim is not going to happen for the next hour. It doesn't have to happen. It could happen. It doesn't have to happen. And it's a most liberating thing. Because it was done. I told you everything. Purim happened, as you can see. The calendar still went on. Somehow it all fitted into place. And it's an amazing, liberating experience if we push ourselves to do it. Now, I suspect that most people are challenged with this concept. Most people are distracted and get very frazzled when the heat is on and the stress is on, right? But this idea just to block it off, and that was a great victory moment in time management where you can actually do that. It came with a lot of inspiration from the day before, but it you know, it's a victory moment when you can do that and sort of just focus on what you're doing. But the inspiration to do that came from something else, and I want to share this with you. And I think many of you probably have seen this or at least heard about it or read it, but I'm going to show it to you visually because I saw it in a video. And it's very powerful when you see it. And I think it's living with me all the time, so I'm going to share it with you. But I need a volunteer. Anyone want to come on the game? Come on, Judy. Okay. The way it works is like this. Let me just take it out. I'm sure some of you have seen this, but... Okay. Whoops, there we are. Okay. These things are what we call big rocks and small rocks, okay? Everyone can see? Okay. Well, these are the small rocks, okay? The small rocks are the quadrant one and the quadrant three, maybe a bit of quadrant four. All the things that keep happening in our life. The big rocks are the quadrant two. So, you know, spiritual activity, relationship building, application for a significant promotion career-wise, mealtime with the family, a weekly dinner class, you know, weekly exercise, yearly vacation, relaxation time, all the big rocks. Okay. So what you need to do is take these rocks and put it into this chart, but the challenge is it's not allowed to go above the rim. Go ahead.
Am I choosing specific ones?
That's up to you. Try and get them all in if you can. Well, we'll see what you're going to give up, okay, if you can choose specific ones. Okay. She's not giving a weekly dinner class. That's good. Yearly vacation is obviously important. Relaxation time, agree. Weekly exercise. Meal time with family. Can't do that. Okay, relationship building is becoming a problem. Doesn't need a promotion, but no. It's too important. No. Oh, let's see. Okay, so hold on a second. There's just been a question. Judy wants to know if she can take these out. The answer is no, they're going to come at you anyway. But I'll tell you what you could do if you want. Okay, bottom line is she's unable to get them into the jar without going top, without compromising one. So, to Judy, application for significant promotion is not that important, but relationship building is. She's having trouble getting that in. What you could do is, you could now have what we call a paradigm shift, and you could use this jar if you want, and do it a different way.
To still get everything in.
Yep. Are you not doing this? Okay. Doesn't need a job? No problem. There's still space here. Okay. You could. Okay. The truth is, I practiced this 5 times yesterday because I had to make sure it's going to work, right? No, it's okay. The truth is, you could have got this in as well. You could have got this in as well, but doesn't matter. The point is very clear, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. The point is very, very clear. The point is that it's not just about... Here comes the punchline of today. Okay? The punchline of today is, and if we learn nothing else besides this, this is critical, critical, critical. The punchline is, it's not just about saying no to quadrant three and quadrant four. It's not just about minimizing the quadrant three and quadrant four things, because some of them will happen. And quadrant one will certainly happen. But it's about looking at our whole week differently. It's a mindset shift. It's what Stephen Covey calls a paradigm shift. Right? It's about living our life based on our values. And when we manage our time and manage our life based on our values, we look at the week differently. Okay? You see, most of us, often, more than often, the problem is not time. The problem is the way we think. There's a famous story with a great sage called Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was the founder of what we call the Musar movement. He was a great master of ethics, and he encouraged the study of... He said it's not just sufficient to study the Talmud or the Chumash. You need to study what he called Musar, which is ethics or self-development books, right? And one time, a guy came to his teacher, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he asked him the following question. He said, listen, I know studying Torah is very, very important. Self-study is really, really important. And of course, part of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's mission was also to encourage general study as well. He said, I have a problem. I know that you're a big encourage the study of Musar, of ethics. But also there's other parts of Torah to study. You know, Talmud is very important. Jewish law is very important. The Chumash is very important. Lots of things that are studied that are important. But I only have half an hour to study. I only have half an hour a week to study. So I'm coming to you. What should I study? Should I study Chumash? Should I study Torah? Or should I follow your way and study Musar? And Rasul Salanta said, you should study Musar, but not because I'm the founder of the Musar movement. He said, the reason that you should study Musar, because if you study ethics and you study the personal growth literature, you will realize that you have more than half an hour. And then you'll be able to study other things as well. In other words, very often the issue, time is an issue, and time is problematic, but more often than not, it's not time that's the issue, it's the mindset. You see, what happens is, when we begin a week, if you plan a week, and we're going to talk about planning a week in a moment. If you plan a week, most of us, you'll think about this. If you sit down on Sunday with a pen and paper and say, what am I going to do this week? What's the first thing that's going to come to your mind? What quadrant? Quadrant one. Most people think quadrant one. Because most people are addicted to the immediate urgency of life. If you sit down with a pen and paper and say, what am I going to do this week? What must get done this week? You'll have a long list of quadrant one activities that absolutely must get done this week. And that's what you're going to schedule first. So you schedule all the small rocks first. And when you finish scheduling all the small rocks first, you simply cannot get in the big rocks. The big rocks are the stuff based on our values. The big rocks are stuff that are so important for our soul, for our emotional being, for our relationships, for every important part of life. In the Talmud, there's an interesting formula about how a person's supposed to spend their day. And it's an important formula spiritually, but it's also an important formula when we talk about this whole concept of scheduling. And the Talmud says that when you get up in the morning, you need to dedicate amount of time to certain things that the Talmud says is critically important. Important both for our soul and for our body. And let me tell you what it is. The Talmud says when you get up in the morning, prayer is a very important part of the morning. You're not supposed to do other activities. You're not supposed to do business. You're not supposed to engage in social activity before you pray. And then the Talmud says when you finish praying, you need to study a little bit. And when you study, you need to eat breakfast. You know that the Talmud is a big believer in a good breakfast. Yeah? The Talmud says that he who eats what's called pat shacharit, which is a good, healthy breakfast, which of course many nutritionists believe the same thing, but the Talmud says that, and I don't know if this is a phenomenon in ancient medicine or it's still applies to modern medicine, but the Talmud says an amazing line. The Talmud says that if you eat a good breakfast, you remove 83 diseases. Right? So that's a quote from the Talmud. I'm not sure exactly what those diseases are, but apparently there are 83 diseases that are possible to come on a person if they don't eat a good breakfast. Right? In other words, health is an important quadrant two activity. Study is an important quadrant two activity. Spirituality is a part. We need to feed our soul as well. So the Talmud is really, the message of the Talmud is saying is don't, I'm not telling you that every day you have to eat healthy, you have to pray, you have to study. I'm telling you you have to do it at the beginning of the day. And the reason is because if you don't do the beginning, first you have to do the beginning of the day because of its importance and its priority. But there's another message as well. The message is because if you schedule it at the beginning of the day, it's done. If you schedule and that's part of your priority and you know that you're not going to do other things first, it will get done. The small rocks will then come through the cracks and fall into place. I mean, in Judaism, of course, this principle is very much emphasized. You know, this whole idea in Judaism of prescribed times to dedicate to certain activities, part of the Jewish culture, it's very, very critical and part and parcel of the whole process. I mean, the whole idea of Shabbat, for example, is the same idea, right? The idea of Shabbat is a forced switch off. It's where Jewish law says that you must spend that day with certain activities. You must end up having that day spending with family. It's a kind of almost a forced shutdown. It's almost a force putting in the big rocks, and then the week will follow with the small rocks. Now, by the way, it's not that simple, because obviously the reason that these things are forced in Jewish literature is because they give you the model. It doesn't mean it's going to work. You need a lot of planning to make sure that it does work. I mean, even with regard to Shabbat, there's a very phenomenal sentence in the Talmud which says, "Misha tarach v'erev Shabbat yochal b'Shabbat." In other words, someone who plans for Shabbat will be able to eat on Shabbat. Literally, it means if you make the gefilte fish before, you'll have what to eat. But it doesn't mean that. It doesn't only mean that. It means spiritually as well. It means if you plan your week in a way where you're leading up to that experience, then you will get the experience out of it, right? If you didn't plan and your whole life is topsy-turvy, and even if you commit to that experience could be almost negative because it doesn't work for you because it's not planned properly, because it needs focus and it needs planning. So the idea of this is that it's not just learning the strategies of saying no or doing short, small things and dedicating 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there, but it is about changing the whole way we look at our week and we look at our life. And therefore, let me go through with you a sort of a strategy that again is part of the 7-habit training, the Stephen Covey model of how you actually put this into practice when you plan your time. And what he says is, he says an amazing thing. He says that what is critical to this process is to have a weekly plan. I never thought of it like this, but he says a weekly plan is so important. Why? Not only a daily plan, a weekly plan. A weekly plan because a week is close enough to be relevant, right? See, a few weeks ago we talked about the mission statement. The mission statement is an overall life plan. But a weekly plan is close enough to be practically relevant, but it's far enough to give it a bit of broad context and a bit of flexibility. So he gives three steps, and I thought it was very powerful. I'm going to share it with you. Three steps to actually how to plan a week. Step number one, he says, and it's down here, is review roles. In other words, to review your mission statement, and then as you review your mission statement, to write down every week, what does that mean in terms of my role? You see, every person has multiple roles. So your role could be a mother, could be a sibling, could be a daughter, could be an employer, an employee, a friend, a cousin, a carer, whatever the role is. But the roles normally come from our mission statement. If our overall mission statement is to have improved relationships, then obviously one of my roles is to be a mother, to be a father, be a good spouse. And roles will then need time to invest to nurture them, right? Roles are not developed, roles are not actualized, are not successful unless time is spent nurturing them and putting time into those roles. So therefore, step one every week, and it's an amazing, powerful idea. You see, it fits so much with a Jewish concept of what we call cheshbon ha-nefesh, which I've shared with you before. We're not supposed to, for most of the part, every day we need to get on with the job, right? It's not good to walk around, as we said before, too much thinking. Can't walk around a whole day worrying about, am I successful in my role, not successful in my role, am I doing what I'm supposed to, not doing what I'm supposed to. That doesn't work. But we are supposed to have designated times to reflect, because the opposite is also no good. The opposite, where people just keep rushing through life, never stopping to reflect, is destructive. And we need times to reflect, and those reflection times happen in different levels. Like I think I shared with you, there's in the Jewish calendar, there's the concept of Yom Kippur, or the month of Elul, which is a reflection of the whole year. There's a concept of Rosh Chodesh, where we're supposed to reflect on the month. But there is this idea of a weekly reflection. In other words, planning for the week. In Jewish literature, it's talked about on Thursday night. It doesn't have to be Thursday night. It could be Friday. It could be Sunday. Whatever the case is. But there is that idea of a weekly reflection, of reflecting on the week gone by, and then just having a quick look at your personal mission statement. Again, what are my values? And because what are my values, how does that affect me in my different roles? And you write down your different roles every single week. And then, step two is, at the beginning of the week, to choose big rocks. In other words, based on my roles, what are my big rocks for this week? If I want to be a good parent, what is the big rock for this week? Is it that I want to spend 10 minutes a day with my children, or I want to spend half an hour doing an activity with one of my children? If my big rock is to improve my relationship, do I want to spend a certain amount of time, as we've talked about before, in relationships today there is not enough time spent bonding. It's a terrible, terrible thing. People, I often have conversations with couples, with people, and one of the things I find out very, very quickly is that people are very, very, very busy doing lots and lots of things, but they're not spending time just schmoozing, just spending time doing nothing. And I'm not talking about watching a movie together, because then you're communicating with the screen, not with each other, right? I'm talking about just going out for a coffee, just taking a walk, not talking about the kids, not talking about the finance. Those are two conditions, right? You're talking about nothing, talking about rubbish, just because it's time to connect. There's not enough time today spent on that. It's a very, very, very big problem. So if that's a big rock for this week, you have to actually choose it on a Sunday. Choose it for this week. This is a big rock that I want to do. If I want to keep, if one of my values is to keep My own personal growth, so self-study could be a big rock. I'm going to spend a certain amount of time this week studying. If it's spirituality, if it's feeding my soul, if it's engaging in a new mitzvah, whatever the value is, whatever my role is, you choose the big rocks. And then the third step is you schedule those big rocks before you schedule any small rock. You open up your diary, whatever your system is, whether it's electronic or paper, and you schedule, you make an appointment with yourself. You block it off in your diary. Just as we always do, we've got lots of things in our diaries. And normally what happens if you have the wrong paradigm is that you start the week by putting all the quadrant ones in your diary and it gets very filled up very, very quickly, but there's no room to put anything else. But if you start the week by putting in quadrant two, you schedule it off, you block it off, there's nothing to talk about. That half an hour is sacred. That half an hour I'm spending with my wife, I'm spending with my husband, I'm spending with my children, I'm spending with a friend, or whatever the case is, I'm doing exercise, I'm making an eating plan, I'm going to a shiur, whatever the quadrant two is, it's blocked off in the diary. After you've scheduled the big rocks, then you start scheduling the small rocks. Some of them will happen, some of them won't happen, but at least you made a start. But you need to do it in a way, there's two things you always have to bear in mind. When we come to the third step, which is scheduling the week, in other words, scheduling in those big rocks, there's two things we have to bear in mind. We have to have realistic expectations. Like, don't go from nothing to 2 hours. It doesn't work. Right? Start with 10 minutes. If you find you haven't spent enough time with a certain person and you want to improve the relationship, schedule 10 minutes this week. But schedule it in a disciplined way. And schedule it in a time where you're going to have the brain space to do it. It might be having a difficult conversation with someone. Schedule it in a time where you're fresh. Don't schedule it after a fast day when you've not eaten all day and just had a big meal. It doesn't work. Schedule it in a time that it's going to work, and then it will work and you can be disciplined to it. Then the small rocks will all follow. And remember the principle that we spoke about last week. That if you do this, and you schedule 5 or 6 big rocks throughout the week, and only 3 of them end up working, that's tremendous success. Because every step in the right direction is eternal, and it's successful and needs to be celebrated. You'll get better at next week, and the week after, but it's this attitude that counts. Let me just end off with a beautiful, beautiful story that I heard about a police force in a Canadian town called Richmond. I assume the town exists because that's what the story was. It's a video I saw. Now, police force are an interesting group of people, right? Because policemen, what quadrant are they? What quadrant do they live in? Quadrant one, right? In other words, policing is generally a quadrant one activity, right? And like in most towns all over the world, I mean, this is a great story, and it'd be amazing if everyone started to learn from it. In this, I suppose, relatively small town, the police force was doing what policemen do, and responding to gang violence, attacks on the street, break-ins, big problem with the youth in that town, unbelievable things. Doing all the quadrant one activities that a police are employed to do. And it wasn't working, as it does in many, many places. Crime wasn't dropping. It just wasn't working. There was a big issue with the youth and vandalism and all kinds of stuff. And they got together and they decided to have a completely... There's a police force, which is designed to be a quadrant one force. They decided to shift their focus and become a quadrant two organization. They said, what can we do as a police to actually bring down the crime? And they started going into the streets and changed their whole paradigm. They scheduled times to go interact with the youth when they weren't doing anything wrong, when they're doing things right. They developed this fantastic system of giving out good tickets. So policemen give out tickets. They also gave out tickets, but they gave out good tickets. They caught youth doing things right. They raised money to buy resources for recreation for teenagers that they shouldn't wander the streets with nothing to do, and therefore running to trouble. And within a relatively short amount of time, the crime actually dramatically dropped in the thing. Now, there were a lot of people at the beginning that were very skeptical. Why don't police stick to their job? It's a quadrant one job. They should enforce the law and that's it. They still enforce the law, but they changed the whole way of looking at things. And that is the key to time management based on values and getting the things that we feel are really important done properly. Because if we start our week and we schedule the week in a way where we first of all committed to living in the moment, we're going to schedule times and no matter what happens before, or what happens after, we're going to try and be completely present in those important activities. But more importantly, we actually schedule those activities because we begin our week with looking at the week not as a quadrant 1 week, not as scheduling all the small rocks, but choosing big rocks and putting them on the diary. Then the small rocks hopefully will fall in place and we'll have a much, much, much more effective week. Now, we've still got 2 weeks left and there's still lots of things to talk about because lots of different little strategies and different concepts to talk about. One of the things I'm going to talk about next week is time management and relationships, because you see, time management is not something you can only do on your own. Right? It's all very good for you to make a very organized life, but everyone around you has to know about it and everyone around you becomes affected by it. So we're going to talk about how to build that in and make sure that we communicate our time management strategies and things that we've learned with other people. Your homework for this week is to make a weekly schedule based on these three things. Have a great week.
Thank you.